Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of October 15th, 2019. This week, I speak with South Carolina-based photojournalist Callie Schell about her new book, Hope Never Fear, A Personal Portrait of the Obamas. Schell has covered seven presidential campaigns and began photographing Barack Obama back in 2004, before president became a part of his name. Schell talks about life behind the lens and what goes into telling the news of the day visually. Yep, we're talking about visual journalism on a podcast. Use your imagination, guys. Interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at @SCLeadPod. We always want to hear from you, and we want to know what you're thinking about. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. Also, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can also rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including NPR One. Now you can listen to all four sections of our podcast while devouring endless amounts of Halloween candy at work, like myself, which has kind of led to a 30-day blood sugar spike that is blurring my vision a little bit. Probably should get checked out. Or while you're trying to be the best of two best men. Oh, by the way, Colin, congratulations on your wedding to Megan. How about that, Nick? Didn't hear you giving Colin a shout-out on your podcast. Oh, wait! You don't have a podcast, do you, Nick? Best man. Quorum call! Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. And just so you know, we have another thorough interview this week, so we kept quorum call a little short. Number one, the Greenville News reports that nine middle school students from the Sterling School's Charlestown Center for the Gifted were charged after school officials learned of threatening messages about plotting to kill a teacher. The students were charged under the 2018 Disturbing Schools Law to address student threats. If convicted of the misdemeanor offense, the sentence carries up to a $2,000 fine and or up to a year in prison. Number two, still duking it out, the Post and Courier reports that Sour Brands, owner of the Duke's Mayonnaise Recipe, filed a lawsuit accusing Greenville-based Duke Brands of trademark infringement, saying the latter's packaging is designed to trick customers into thinking its products, such as chicken salad and pimento cheese spreads, are produced by Sour. Now, Duke Brands spokesman said Duke Brands and the mayonnaise owner have coexisted for decades without a problem. But that changed, she said, when the private equity firm Falfurrias Capital Partners bought Sour in June. Now, this is separate from the case involving a former Duke Brands salesman accused of stealing the company's sandwich spread recipes. The subsidiary Duke Foods obtained a permanent injunction against the salesman and his new employer, Knott's Fine Foods. And number three, State Senator Dick Harpulian filed a lawsuit against the South Carolina Department of Commerce for refusing to publicly disclose records regarding economic development deals involving Giddy Tire and Viva Recycling, this according to the state newspaper. Harpulian accused Commerce of violating the state's Freedom of Information Act by withholding some documents and heavily redacting others that he requested regarding taxpayer-funded incentives given to the two companies. A day later, Commerce released the records. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, a taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline, Florida Man arrested for trying to get alligator drunk. Short, sweet, perennial. And just like the Braves getting beat down by the St. Louis Cardinals, we buried the lead. That's right, we're a Nats and Phillies podcast here. Go Nats! See, we don't need you, Bryce Harper. Look what you did to the Phillies. Barely! Callie Schell is an award-winning photojournalist who has covered seven presidential campaigns, one of which was President Barack Obama's. She's been a photographer for CNN since 2015 and Time Magazine since 2001. She's also served 8 years as the official photographer for Vice President Al Gore. Callie began photographing Obama during his U.S. Senate run in 2004 and continued through his 2 terms in office. The result is her new book, Hope Never Fear, which is an intimate book filled with behind-the-scenes images and candid moments of the president, his family, and their public lives. Now, one of the things that makes The Lead a great podcast is that we hear from journalists who bring you the news unfiltered. And Callie Schell and other photojournalists bring you the same news, but through images. They hustle, they plan, they wait, they capture split-second moments that tell the stories of the day and help bring the reader into the story. And also, we should mention that Callie is a resident of Sullivan's Island, and I'm talking with her in a recreational vehicle here at the Charleston Blue Jam. You can probably hear the noise in the background.
It's a very nice vehicle.
Callie Schell, welcome to the South Carolina Lead.
Gavin, thank you so much.
This is so awesome.
I love the lead. I love public radio. Let's make a big plug for ETV, and thanks for having me.
And we should say it's not that most ideal location tape, but we're journalists. We're running around. This is what it is. You know, we do what we can.
Yeah, it's kind of great. We got out in front of us. We've got candidates and a whole field of people eating.
Yeah. And your son's out here shooting and writing too.
Yes.
Generational. It's great to see.
His first big campaign rally. So I think he's pretty pumped.
The proud mom.
Yeah, I am.
Well, Callie, I want to get into your new book, Hope Never Fear, in a minute. But first, I really want to love on photojournalism really quick. I graduated with a photojournalism degree from Kent State, worked at several newspapers in Ohio and Louisiana before getting to South Carolina. And photojournalism is not an easy sport. It's a, you know, it's an individual sport, but it's not an easy one. We all have cameras on our phones these days. It seems like everyone's a photographer. But tell our listeners out there what really separates, you know, just the average person taking a snapshot versus someone like yourself, your husband, other working photojournalists who are out there trying to capture these moments. What makes the difference there in a working photojournalist?
I'm not the person to tell you if my photographs are better than someone's cell phone photographs, but, you know, I think we're living in a world of a lot of selfies. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that my photographs show you the complete opposite of that. I want to take people in because, you know, I've spent 30 years photographing campaigns. We all see the person at the podium.
Yeah.
And so I hope that with my photographs, you see the other side. You know, so I think a photojournalist, because we do a lot of research, we write, like my husband's both an author and a photographer for Geographic. We're trying to tell a story in a different way. You know, you can read the words, but I think sometimes unless you see the photograph, you don't really
get that picture.
Know if you believe what you've read. I mean, I worked at the White House for 8 years, and I was always amazed how I could stand outside the Oval Office and watch someone tell you what just went on in the Oval Office. And I'm going, that's not what happened. I was in there. You know, so I think sometimes the photograph solidifies what you're trying to say. You know, so when I do profiles on people, I ask a lot. I mean, I am like, okay, this is the most important time in your life. And I want to be there on your good days, your bad days, good hair day, bad hair day. But I want to show people who you are. You know, so we live in a country, which I think is wonderful, a free country, where you have to go out there, shake every hand, and you're asking people to trust you. So I want people to see how amazing a campaign is. It's crazy and it's wonderful. And I want people to know that these people give up their time with their family. They sleep on buses. They try to shake every hand. That the voters get so excited, some throw babies. And, you know, so I think it's just another way to tell a story or to reinforce what a writer is telling you. You know, I just want to take people back to understanding that, you know, we would not have known what was going on in Vietnam if it was not for the press. And we would not know about Syria. We'd not know about Bosnia. You know, I've lost friends, photographers, you know, covering wars. And that's another thing is a photographer has to be there. And so it's interesting in a time where everyone has a phone and everyone's taking a photograph that the photo staffs across the board are getting smaller and smaller. It's the first thing they cut. Mm-hmm. You know, even magazines, same thing. You know, it's the first thing to go.
And Kelly, looking at your book, Hope Never Fear, and your history covering presidential campaigns, tell us how you managed to get, you know, these great assignments covering the White House, covering Obama, and then also how you manage to keep these images fresh and unique when you're surrounded by stage pageantry in some situations. How do you kind of keep it going, and how did you get involved in all this kind of quickly?
When I met Obama, I was out covering the Kerry campaign, but I'd started with Dean, and then I went to Edwards, and then I ended up on Kerry. With Kerry, that's backstage, I met Barack Obama, and I had an hour backstage, so I was watching him greet people. And, you know, when you've covered four campaigns at that point, the first thing you notice is, do they greet people? Do they listen to people? Are they excited? And how do people react? And I watched people in this hall, just didn't even know who he was, but they were like, he's so nice. So I was like, this is interesting. Then he went out, and everybody was excited to see him. So I think by doing so much politics I've learned to...
You get to see those nuances.
Well, because then you realize, okay, I want to photograph somebody that's going to be interacting. I really don't want somebody who's just going to sit around mm-hmm. and wait for them to come. So
this
he,
is when I go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say,
so who's out there right now in 2020, Callie, that you're noticing these things? So we don't have to do that, but keep going with Obama, yeah.
And so I did a lot of photographs, and I sent it to my editor, and I said, this guy is going to run. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's running for state, but I mean, we got to watch him. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of our job as journalists anyway. Mm-hmm. What if you found someone to kind of make a note of it? And then he became state. So at that point, I just always asked for, could I just come in and do a little bit of a person in their office? Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I just walk with you to the next event? So it's a little bit of both getting the candidate or the person I'm photographing to trust me, mm-hmm. But then you also have to get everybody else. You've got to get your chief of staff. You've got to get your campaign director. You've got to get every new person that gets hired every week. You're like, hi, I'm Callie. I also am 6 feet, so I'm hard to miss. So I'm very hyper. So I spend a lot of time just standing in a corner, mm-hmm. and I'll have people say to me, they're not doing anything. And I'm like, I love not doing anything. And then they'll say, well, you're going to stand in a hallway for an hour. And I'm like, I can stand in a hallway for 5 to 6 hours. I just need a few minutes.
Yeah.
If you look in the book, because the whole point of the book is to try to show the journey of this man and his family to the White House, not just the White House. There's a photograph in the book where he's at a rest stop. Mm-hmm. And he has his hand in a car. He's talking to a family, but there's nothing but open field. There's no Secret Service. There's no press. There's no staff. You can never find that. That picture does not exist anymore.
Yeah.
So I want people to see where they started. Mm. So at that time, we were in a van driving across Illinois, and he was stumping, I guess, or campaigning for the state reps because he was now a U.S. rep. Mm-hmm. And it was just a friend driving the van. It was great.
Yeah.
And,
The moment does not exist anymore for Barack Obama.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And
I think you mentioned that, like you mentioned in the beginning of your book, how you're capturing him doing the dishes, I think, with the girls.
With the girls, right there. And he had talked about how much he missed that. Because, you know, when you are a U.S. senator, you spend most of your life flying to D.C. and mm-hmm. then coming back to your constituents. So he would only see his daughters, like, on the weekend. So, mm-hmm. Or, I mean, part on a weekday or weekend. So anytime he was home, he was like, oh, I love breakfast, and I like taking him to school. Because he was already growing. He had done the DNC mm-hmm. speech.
Mm-hmm. The big one that put him on
and
the map.
I knew that my window of privacy was going to close soon.
Yeah.
Because I had been the Gore's photographer for mm-hmm. 8 years and been around the family, and they were like, you know, you just want to give the kids space. So I just said, so I'm going to be there. Can I get you at home? And he said, sure, I don't care. And so I got there, and Michelle Obama was so gracious, and she was like, I'm in the middle of answering BlackBerry messages, and I've got to do my checkbook. And I said, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm always telling people, you don't just ignore
just
me and don't talk to me.
Doing,
do not be polite, because I need to make images. Mm-hmm. And they were great. You know,
again,
sat down.
You don't stage images. You know, that's another thing about photojournalism. This is all straight up unfiltered what's happening
right.
at the moment.
I mean, I get it. I was doing a lecture in France mm-hmm. once, and there's a photograph, and it's in the book, where Barack Obama's doing pull-ups.
Yeah.
I used to call them chin-ups. I now know pull-ups. I'm so sorry. I know they're harder. And people were going, you set that up. And I was like, I did not set that up. And at the time, my son was very young, and he was cute. They said, well, did you do something on the computer? And he goes, my mom's horrible, technically. She could never digitize something if her life depended on it. But, you know, that's what I think separates photojournalists from a portrait photographer is we are trying to show you who these people are mm-hmm. in real images. And I don't ever mess with that. I couldn't anyway. I can't even do a portrait. I cannot tell you what to do. But I want you to trust, you know, what I'm doing and mm-hmm. see who they are. There's no point to anyway, you know.
The opening line, the first sentence of your book says, this book isn't a love fest for the Obamas. It isn't meant to make us miss them more or deepen what divides us. Why was that so important for you to have that opening line? It's not meant to make us miss them more or deepen what divides us. Why'd you want to put that out there front?
Because I hear continuously, I hope Michelle Obama will run. I wonder what they're going to do. And I'm like, they've done their part. Now we have to pick up. And I think we have, you know, this amazing generation mm-hmm. coming up. You know, we have the 1.8 billion people from the 10 to 24. and this is the generation, and they want to actually get involved. So I think sometimes we ponder on, oh, what are we going to do? They're gone. And it's like, well, you're going to do what they did. You're going to get involved. You're going to vote. You're going to, you know, do. We have to pick up. You know, you can't just keep asking the same people to go do it again and again and again. I do hope that you look at the book and you still do kind of have a love fest. But it's also a book to tell, especially, like, I think when you look at it, to see the power of the black vote. Mm-hmm. To see the power of young people, because that was one of the turning points in his campaign, was thousands of young people started coming to his rallies and dragging their parents. And I was here, we were covering him and during the South Carolina primaries, and I was with a driver, this black driver, and I said, are you going to vote on Tuesday? And he said, no, I'm not going to vote. I said, you're not going to vote? Why? He said, well, I would vote for Barack Obama, but there's no way a black man is going to beat a white woman in the South Carolina primary. And I said, well, if you don't go vote, he just told me about it. He had a young daughter. I go, what is that saying to your young daughter? Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know. So he won.
Yeah.
And a week later, I called because I had his number from taxi, and I said, I just got to know. Did you vote? He goes, I voted. I took my daughter. And I was so glad I went. You know, so that's kind of the book, is to like say, get involved. But the other book is, when you look at the photographs, are to say to any person, you can do this.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking a minute ago, and so there's some photos in the book where it's like, you're in the limo with Obama, you know, he's just reading the newspaper, or, you know, one of those iconic images from the inaugural balls when you guys are in the freight elevator and Obama's having a moment with Michelle and the Secret Service are trying not to look on. Just tell me a little bit about like some of those candid moments and what it's like to be capturing history at that time and seeing it up close like that.
I worked at the White House for 8 years, and it's an amazing job. It's all history, but it's also exhausting. You know, you have no life. And so, same with covering a campaign, you know, you're away from your family. But this campaign was particularly amazing because, you know, it's the first black president that was running, and people were like, oh, he's nice, but there's no chance. And then it kept growing. And, you know, so when you were covering it, you really did feel like, okay, this is the great race. This is, you know, people did not normally just cry at rallies when he would speak, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that always happens are people throw their babies and put bumper stickers on their dogs. But it was just, he, early on, thousands of people were showing up. When that starts happening, I think it also helps if you've covered a lot, because you can actually say to the candidate, no, this is not normal.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Doesn't everybody have this many people? You know, I love watching. The crazier it gets, the better. And that's the nice thing about a campaign, it is crazy. Once you get to the White House, it gets really kind of calm. You know, so also when you go into the White House, you're living in a museum. It is actually a national, you know, museum. And it's the loneliest job for someone that's never alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you have to learn. There's a photograph in my book where Barack Obama is dancing with Michelle Obama, and you only see her back. I wish my back looked that good. But anyway, you only see her back, and he's dancing. And when this picture came up, we did 100 days story, and it was going to be a double truck, and they were shrinking it. And I kept saying to my editor at the time, Rick Stingle, I go, what are you doing to my photograph? And he goes, I can't run this picture. It's too emotional. I hope that's what I look like when I dance with my wife, but I'll get slaughtered for this. And I was going, that's great. You better run it. But I wanted to show how you have to learn how to go into your own private world and just kind of cancel out the rest of what's going on, or I don't think you can survive living there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's this, and one thing you'll see is, like you said, that in the elevator, so it's inauguration night, they're all dressed up, he's in tuxedo and she's in this, like, you know, beautiful gown, and they're having a moment in the elevator, and they're kidding each other, and you'll see staff and agents trying to look around, and there's a way sometimes when they would see each other and come together, it's the only time they would see each other on campaign in weeks, and everybody would turn their backs to them because it was the best you could do. It was the only privacy you could give them. You know, so.
And you're in an elevator with not only just you, but it's Pete Souza and David Hume Kennerly.
David Hume Kennerly, we're all three there. So, I mean, luckily it's also inauguration. The inauguration's over, so that, you know, I need privacy. But there's also in like another photograph where he's standing in the rotunda getting ready to walk out.
Mm.
And it, you know, for me, I'd asked him earlier in the day, are you nervous? And he was like, no, I got this. But I think, you know, in the photograph, his eyes are closed and people say, oh, I bet you was nervous. And I said, I don't think he was nervous. I know he wasn't nervous. He said he wasn't. But I think it's that moment before you realize your whole life is going to change. You're going to step out. You know, and in that situation, it's myself, it's Pete. I think Charles Omni was working for Newsweek is there. I'm sure David was there. You know, so in those moments, you have other people. Yeah. But, you know, in the holding room, it was just Pete and I, because I had been asked to be the White House photographer. And that's a different story, but I turned it down. And so Pete took the job. You know, luckily, we'd just come off a campaign, so two photographers didn't seem that bad. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you go in the White House, it's...
And team, yeah.
And you see, so you have to learn how to take a little bit and then give them a break and take a little bit. You know, in the limo that you talked about, we're in the limo and I'm taking some photographs. And I hadn't seen him in about a year, so I was a little nervous because...
So much has happened.
Yeah, so much has happened, and Pete's his photographer now. And because, you know, the campaign, I was the one that was always... Pete wasn't there much, so I was always the one around him. You know, so I would go out every week and spend time to develop the rapport. So I just didn't know if I would get to him. And after I'd taken a little bit, he finally said, do you think you got it? And I was like, oh no, I pushed too much. Yeah. And I said, yes.
The
and
he goes,
it is the last thing. You're just like, oh my gosh. Because I try to be extremely sensitive. I always try to stop before that ever happens. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like watching an animal. You just, okay, they
it's
need
coming.
A break.
Yeah,
it's coming. You know, and I went, oh my gosh. And then he laughed because, no. I just want to hear about Hunter.
Yeah,
you know, how's Hunter? Yeah, my son. And how's Vince, my husband? And I said, great. And we kept talking. Then finally he said, okay, I'm curious. You know, you're out there more. What did people ask? What did they ask about me? And I said, well, I'll tell you what everybody asks. And he said, what? And I said, they ask me if you're really that nice, or is he really that nice of a person? Mm-hmm. And then I just stopped. Yeah. And, you know, I told him, and he looked at me and he goes, well, what do you say? And I said, oh, I said, yeah, you really are. I said, I tell him you really are that nice. Yeah, he burst out laughing, and the agents were in the front of the car, and they laughed so hard. And, you know, but that's another thing when you say, like, working at the White House for 8 years, I knew
all the
staff. And you know, a lot of the campaign staff is, you will see, one candidate retires and they go on to a new campaign. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, young photographers and writers, I said, I mean, this should be in you anyway. It was how I was brought up. You should be nice to everyone.
Oh, yeah, yes.
And you should definitely be nice to everyone as you're climbing that little ladder. Because if not, there's nothing to catch you when you go down the ladder, because you will go down.
Yeah.
I don't care how high you get.
Kind of wrapping up here because we have gone a little long, but.
Yeah, so sorry.
It's okay.
And you are going to edit this to make me sound really awesome and wonderful and people buy this book. Yeah.
It won't take much because you are such a good speaker.
Of course,
speaker.
It'd help if you can find the book, but anyway.
But what was a favorite moment of two, a moment or two of you of yours covering Obama that you can point back to, or an image of yours that you enjoyed making so much? I mean, obviously there's so many, maybe you don't have a favorite, but some pointed moments. I mean, we're talking about the limo, any other times you want to have any shed light
on? I think the whole group, but there is a photograph I like. It's the cover. It's the situation that's on the cover, but it's the inside photograph I like even more. Mm. We're in New Hampshire for the primaries, and they hadn't seen each other in 2 weeks. And he arrived separately the night before, so they stayed in different hotel rooms. They were going to be on a bus for 30 minutes, and they wouldn't see each other again for a week. And I wanted something that showed people really how hard it is to run a campaign and be away from your family. And we're on the bus, and they're reading the newspaper, and they're doing all these things, and all of a sudden she just puts her head on his shoulder and she falls asleep. And Valerie Jarrett was with me, and she patted me, and I said, I know he doesn't care if I photograph him asleep, but does she? Because I'd been able to ask him that.
Yeah.
And she goes, of course she doesn't, Callie, not if it's you. So I made this photograph, and for me it was just a moment where I knew they trusted me. They didn't care that I was there, but I wanted people to see the intimacy And that's kind of like, I don't shoot a lot.
I was going to say, I'm wondering when you're in that situation in the freight elevator or in this situation, is it like one or two frames and then you're like, okay, especially when you have the other photographers, you don't want to be, you know, like doing a spray, yeah. You know, you're just like,
I don't take many and it,
wait for it and
I feel like I take a lot. I can, mm-hmm. you know, my husband edits my work. He's like the best editor. And sometimes he'll go, you know, more than two frames would have been good. Luckily, this one is in focus. This one's not.
Yep.
But yeah, I try not to, mm-hmm.
Hit the motor drive and just blast it. Yeah,
and I try to just kind of watch, mm-hmm. you know, and I also find that shooting a lot makes them nervous, but it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
You know,
and you
so.
Want to keep everyone.
Plus, I also find that when you start photographing people, if you don't take a picture, they get past that point of trying to figure out when you're going to take a picture. They just go, okay, never mind. She's not going to shoot anything. Just sit there if you want to. And it helps people forget that you're there.
Mm-hmm. And then Kelly, just kind of wrapping up. Tell me again another elevator story. When you with
you like elevators too. You and I we do great on elevators.
You got to be turned on to them. When you were talking about him winning the election night, correct?
Right.
When he got enough delegates to win.
Well, we were we were in St. Paul, and he had collected enough primaries and delegate votes to be officially the Democratic nominee. You know, but Hillary was. Still in the race, but he had enough. And the magazine's like, we need a great celebration picture. Barack Obama only high fives usually for sports. And I'm going, it's not going to happen. And we get in the elevator, and just for 1 second, he crossed his arms. I wouldn't say smiled. He just looked like we've gotten this far, but everybody in the elevator's looking at him and they're all smiling. You know, and so it's my, I would definitely say my photographs don't scream. Mm-hmm. They just are, you have to kind of look at them. Like, they're just kind of quiet little moments. Mm-hmm. But for me, the body language, it sealed it. And there was another photographer in the elevator, and they said, well, that was like lost. There was nothing in that elevator. And I was like, oh my gosh. And that was still in the days. I mean, I didn't really get to see it. I handed my card to someone that was there because we were on deadline. It was like midnight.
Yeah.
And they popped it, and my editor from Time calls me, and they were like, you nailed it. Yeah. I was like, I did?
I mean, talk about, like, that's the pressure right there.
Yeah, because I'm not. Pete can hit every moment. I mean, everything that happens, I'm not. I miss a lot, and I get a lot out of focus. But
it happens.
Yeah, it's kind of like people paint. Mm-hmm. Mine is with the camera, and I'm just waiting and waiting until hopefully I get that little moment. I hope.
And that's good advice for people out there, just to keep waiting and looking for those moments. And Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Gavin. You're so sweet to be in here. We're about 100 degrees in this like RV because it was so loud.
We had to turn the AC off. We can turn the AC on now.
But thank you to everyone who's listening.
Yeah, and
I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Jen.
Thank you.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Leading off, the South Carolina Republican Party held a rally outside of 1st Congressional District Representative Joe Cunningham's offices, demanding he take a side on impeachment. Cunningham, a Democrat, told the Post-Courier that he is withholding judgment on whether our president should be impeached until hearing all the evidence and ideally hearing directly from the whistleblowers. Senator Lindsey Graham spoke with Axios about President Donald Trump's decision to withdraw American troops from northern Syria and leaving our Kurdish allies exposed to attacks from the Turks. He called the move worse than when Obama left Iraq because you've got so much information as to what happens. This would be a game changer to our national security. This would pave the way to the reemergence of ISIS. And the Associated Press reports that former four-term South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy has been tapped to serve as outside counsel to President Donald Trump as the House impeachment inquiry expands. This according to an administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss internal legal matters. Gowdy didn't run for re-election last year because he was sick of Washington. And just a personal aside here, not political at all, we're just excited to see that coif of hair back in the news, making news. Can't wait to see the latest iteration. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Did you know that Southcom Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some more trivia? We got him back this week. Hey,
yep.
Russ.
Keyed up, too. Whew. Yeah, we are days away from the fall classic, the World Series.
Oh.
Jacked up.
Can we get a sound effect of a baseball hitting a bat? Something like that.
This ball is crushed.
Yeah.
Imagine. Imagine yourself, listeners.
So we'll do some sports. Knowing you're the big sports guy, I figured we'd have a sports question this week.
Yeah. Well, I'm really outdoor right now, you know, fishing, et cetera.
You know, South Carolina has a rich tradition with baseball. Never had Major League Baseball in South Carolina, but a really strong tradition in baseball. We'll touch on that in just a minute. Mm. But the question is, who first introduced baseball to South Carolina? Who brought the sport of baseball to South Carolina for the first time?
All right.
A, Irishman working on the docks in Charleston Harbor. B, soldiers from the Palmetto Regiment returning home in 1848 after service in the Mexican-American War. C, Union soldiers stationed in South Carolina during the Civil War.
Yankees.
D, owners of the Northern textile mills who brought their textile mills to the state around 1900 in that time frame.
Run those by us again for everyone who's driving down I-26 trying to listen and also tailgate at the same time.
Irishmen that worked on the docks early days in Charleston Harbor. Soldiers coming home from the Mexican-American War in about 1848 from the Palmetto Volunteer Regiment that served with distinction in that war. Union soldiers that were stationed here during the Civil War. And Northern textile mill owners bringing the sport with them as they brought their textile mills to South Carolina in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
I'm trying to keep track with these dates. These are moments like this when you wish that you would have watched Ken Burns' documentary on baseball. And that's on me. Obviously, yeah, really playing up that the Yankee aspect there with the Union soldiers and the textile mill owners. And I feel like that's like a split right there. That's like one. So, I don't know the origins, and I want to go with the Union soldiers, but I'm still thinking. Keep shouting at the radio, people. I might hear you. I went with my gut last week, and then that just kind of screwed me. So I'm gonna classic. I'm gonna go with B. Soldiers coming home from the Mexican-American War. I want to go with Union soldiers or the textile mills.
Well, America's game couldn't come from Mexico. The answer is C, Union soldiers stationed in the state during the Civil War.
But they could have mixed with other soldiers. I don't know. I didn't want to go. I said Union soldiers, too.
They brought baseball to the state.
I have no boundaries anymore.
This ball is crushed.
They brought baseball to the state for the first time. Now, there wasn't a lot of fighting in South Carolina during the war.
Yeah.
Our capital city was burned to the ground. But there were Union soldiers stationed below Charleston, mostly in the Beaufort, Hilton Head area. The movie Glory, the 1988-89 Glory, that took place in that area. But as I mentioned, the state does have a rich tradition with baseball. Strong minor league baseball throughout. And today, Greenville, Columbia, Charleston, Myrtle Beach all have minor league teams. A strong American Legion ball in the state. And, of course, the colleges, USC and Coastal Carolina, both won College World Series in recent years.
And Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Correct.
Of Pickens County. No relation, but I don't wear socks. So I'm sockless Gavin Jackson. No relation to Shoeless Joe Jackson. Just putting that to rest out there. Thanks, Russ. Way to knock it out of the park this week.
Play ball.
Go Nats. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever podcasts live. Spooky. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram at SCLeadPod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at SCLEDEPOD. We got some sticky swag, sticker swag, swag that stickers. That's right, sticker swag. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Stickers. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to Callie Shell and to Jimmy Williams for that sweet recreational vehicle at the Blue Jamboree. Our producer's A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. Our intern is Nick Papademos. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on October 10th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message.
Yeah. Ooh, gotcha.